Accession number 11939, rule 20.
Mr. J. L. Williams, Reel 20. You continue with your story of the Italian priest, Mr. Williams.
Well, as I say, I went up and I got on the edge of the village and met an Italian and got talking to him, an elderly sort of man. And he told me the Germans were in the village at that time, collecting food and so on. So I just went into a little behind the house and got on talking to him. And he said the priest was a bad man. He was a bad priest. Didn't say he was a bad man, a bad priest. And he hoped that the English would soon come. I said, well, we'll see what we can do about that. I said, I must go back to my unit now. He said, before you go, Capitano, my little daughter is in the trench. You see, we were shelling the edge of the village from time to time. And he said, she's sitting there. She's sitting, a little girl sitting there with a doll. He said, I'd like her to see an Englishman because the Germans have been very nasty to her. When she wouldn't smile at them, just slap her across the face. And so I told her that when the English came, that wouldn't happen. So I went to him and I said, you saw no English, eh? You know, I'm an Englishman. We have little girls like you in England. Now, they aren't afraid of me. You're not afraid of me. No, signor. I said, well, now, I'm going to come up sometime. And then the nasty Tedeschi, the Italian word for Germans, Tedeschi, will go away. He said, yes, Capitano. He told her, he had to call him Capitano. I left this poor little girl sitting with her doll and dodging our shelter from. I went back down again. And the CO detailed me to take a fighting patrol up. And what I do, I was going up to the village and sending a truck round the bottom way up, all ready to fight. And my job was to hit any Germans who were there and get the priest for intelligence. And I got up there, and the Germans got, because when the truck came round, I gave it a little time for me to get up before the truck. It ran over a couple of miles and was blown up and had a man killed, two men killed there. But we went in the village and the Germans had gone. And so, Dove il sacerdote, where's the priest? So one of the villagers took me down. I took one of my men down. I said, fetch him up here. And then I got a second truck up by that time. And I said, Padre, avete aiutato I tedeschi, you've been helping the Germans. Looked at me with an instant look on his face, and all the peasants were standing around with their feet wrapped in rags and so on, looking as thin and bent as could be, you know. And I said, in camionetta, per favore, get into the little truck if you please. He looked at me and refused. And I thought of my two men who were killed, and I thought of these poor peasants. So I turned them round. Well, I used to play rugby, but I never drop-kicked anybody as much as I did his backside. He didn't touch the truck till he was at the far end. I said, I'd take him away. And when I turned around, you know, those peasants were on their knees. They were waiting for me to be struck by lightning, I think. Anyhow, we got ourselves sorted out, and we got some bread and food up from the villagers, from army. And then the CO told me to stay up there because the Germans were around that side and around that side. But there was a partisan group. He wanted me to contact them there. And I contacted this partisan group, and there was a sort of little citadel in the village, so we occupied that. And the leader of this group was a bloke called Nico. And he spoke the most appalling Chicago English, you know. He said, goddamn Heinies and goddamn Krauts and so on. And I said, Nico, where do you come from? He said, well, I carried a gun for one of the mobs in Chicago. And he said, I got deported back to Naples, where my home is. I said, what the hell are you doing up in the mountains here? And he said, well, them goddamn authorities wanted me to join the Italian army. He said, I wasn't going to fight with the bloody Italian army. So he said he came up here and he was leading these, like, crack shot with a revolver. He must have had plenty of training. And I got them some boots. They were in civilian clothing, boots, and some 303 rifles. And the CEO said, don't get involved yourself, because they knew, those men knew that if they were taken, the Germans would shoot them. And entitled to do so because they were frontier. Once I went up and I saw them putting a little bit of attack in, and then they retreated, and there were two or three left on the ground, and I saw the German officer going around shooting him through the head. And Nico was there, and he looked after me. And I was there for a while, telling him, to be careful. And I remember once they brought a German in with a bullet through his head. And I went through his pockets, his status, his usual pay book and so on. He was an ordinary panzer grenadier. And I said, right, oh, Nico, arrange to get him buried. He said, okay, Captain. And then about a day and a half later, I saw a whole lot of women with children going up into a corner of this bit of courtyard place. I thought, what the hell are they going up there for? So I went and looked, and the partisans had this German laid out, stiff as a board, covered in ice, because it was very severe weather, snowstorm. I said, now what the hell is that for? I said, well, Captain, these guys, their wives don't know what the hell they're doing, so they sort of show them this kraut and show them that what job they were doing. Well, I said, for Christ's sake, they've all seen it now, haven't they? He said, yeah, well, I said, get them buried. And I was there for a little while, and it was a most dangerous place, because when they were cleaning the rifles and easing springs, there was a barrage of shots in all directions. And I remember once I was sitting at this bit of table having an egg which somebody had produced for me, fried. And sunny side up, as Nico said, you know. I was eating it and the wall was there. And suddenly, through the wall, there came a tremendous burst like that and my egg covered with plaster. And there's Nico said, damn goddamn guys in there, and that bloody rifle went in, and he kicked them and booted them. He said, you damn near killed the English capitano, you stupid bastard, you were saying, talking half in Italian, half in English. Anyhow, I stayed there for a little while, and then I had to go away. And before I'd gone away, I said to Nico, what is your name, Nico? He said, Niccolo Guglielmo, which is Nick Williams. Ah, I said, io sono Guglielmo, in Italian, Williams. Gee, Captain, he said, no, siamo cucini, we are cousins. And then he said, you got to go now, Captain. I said, yes, we're moving out of the district now. And went and shook hands with all the partners. And he said, hey, Captain, can I join the British Army? I said, you're an Italian civilian, you know. I said, oh, Christ. I said, I'll join the British Army. I'd like to serve with you if I could. I said, you can't, Nico. God, Christ, he said, I wish to hell I could. He said, I'm not going to go into the goddamn Italian army, I tell you that. And he put this great big tall fellow, he could have eaten me, arms around my neck, sobbing away with tears running down his face because he wanted to join the army, you know.
And they were fighting in the hills with you?
That's right, yes, yes. But our people were away there. I was well in front of our people, you know, but it was very broken country, deep snow, you couldn't do much. And I felt a bit of a rat because I was telling him where targets were, you know. Limited sort of way. And then
so where did you go after this?
We came back. Now I'm trying to think, we went up into the mountains again, and we were doing sort of patrol work and that sort of thing. And then a little bit later, the snow had gone, there was nothing really striking, it was just ordinary patrol activity, a bit of shelling, a bit of mortaring and that sort of thing, but nothing conclusive in the way of battles. It was just holding a mountain posts, really, you know. And incidentally, we found some bodies eaten by wolves, so there were still wolves in the Apennines. And then one day, our MO said, come here, Dad. I've been watching you walking. This was getting on a little bit, you know. I've been watching you walking. He said, you're limping rather badly. He said, if a shell landed, you've got no chance of getting down. What's the trouble? I said, well, I was a bit arthritic or something. Well, he said, you can't go on like this. I said, oh, Christ, I can't leave the battalion. What will happen to me? And he said, well, I'll come out and send you to hospital. And sent me to hospital, and I was given x-rays and so on. I was in hospital for about a fortnight. And then I was suddenly medically downgraded for 3 months. And I said, well, look, can I go back to the... I'm used to the battalion. I'm an infantry officer. I can't do anything else. No, downgraded for 3 months. And I was sent back to the depot. And I was...
Where was the depot?
It was way back, not very far from Naples. And I was doing... because I was a mortar instructor and also a small arms instructor, I was training some of the temporarily people waiting to be posting. I was giving them training in gas and that sort of thing, you know, and thing. And then there was a friend of mine's company one day. He said, he was at second echelon where all the records were kept. He said, I saw that you'd been in hospital and you moved here, he said, I've come to see you. I said, oh, God, Christ, can you get me anywhere, anyway? I said, I want to get back up the line again. He said, well, you can't get up the line while you're category B. And he said, I was there for about another month, and then I was medically examined, and I was given another 3 months.
What was the problem? Arthritis? Was it arthritis?
Arthritis in the hip, you know. I was getting x-rays and so on, but I was buggering about it. I was a very, very disappointed sort of man, you know. And this friend of mine came and he said, I've got your job. Staff captain. I said, what the hell do I... Oh, he said, it's second echelon. He said, if you can write your bloody name, you can be a staff captain there. And I was taken to Naples Airport, put under a quarter, and flown back to North Africa, to GHQ second echelon. That was the finish of my active life. I was a staff officer. The only advantage was I found I had a room and a bed miles away from the fighting, and I had 6 shillings a day more than I got when I was in the slit trench.
What date was this?
Now then, this must have been about August or September 1944. And I should, it's not action that happened, but when my 6 months freedom was up, let me say it this way, I had a little run-in with a brigadier. I put my religion down, not the beginning of the war, but as agnostic, because I was fed up with being buggered about and sworn at on church parades and that sort of thing when I was a sergeant. I carried on. And when I got here, there was a brigadier who everybody was afraid of. Now, I was in that bloody-minded sort of way that I thought the only thing that happened to me, if he sends me away, I'll get up the line a bit quicker, you know. And there was a church parade, church, and I didn't go. And I got a letter from the adjutant, please advise for information of the brigadier why you did not attend divine service at the Church of England. So I wrote it, but I beg to refer the brigadier to my army form 199A, bracket officer's record of service, from which you observe that my religion is agnostic. It does not require me to attend the Church of England. I have the honour to be your obedient servant. And the next day was Armistice Sunday, so I went to church. I got another letter from the cheeky bastard. Please advise for information with Brigadier why, if you are agnostic, you attended divine service. So I said, I beg to refer the Brigadier to the Oxford English Dictionary, from which you'll note that the word agnostic means one who has reasonable doubts. This does not debar me from attending any service I wish to attend, and I wish to advise the Brigadier that from time to time I will attend Methodist, Church of England, and Roman Catholic services, as and when I feel like it. I have the honour to be your obedient servant. I saw the adjutant and I said, is that all right? He said, yes, but he said, he's got it in for you now. Well, when my 6 months were up, I'd written up to the CO, it was a new CO in the 6th Battalion, but he'd been a company commander when I was there. He said, he wrote back and said, I'll give you a company jacket if you can get up. And he said, I'll send a letter to the brigadier, I told him about this brigadier, and you make a personal application for an interview. And he said, my letter and your interview should do the job. And I went to the brigadier, I got an interview, and I said, I'm now A1, sir, and I've got the opportunity of going up the line. I think you may have already received a letter from a colonel of the 6th Battalion, Royal Kent Regiment. He said, how old are you, Williams? Well, at that time I was 32. I said, 32. He said, there's no requirement for an infantry officer going to line over the age of 30. Well, I said, I've been in the line when I was over 30, sir, and I'm a trained infantry officer, and I'd feel much happier if I was with the battalion. Also, I've got the chance of a company and some sort of promotion. He said, you're a trained staff officer now, aren't you? I said, yes, sir. He said, well, I can't afford to lose a trained staff officer. I'm not going to allow you to leave this.
What was his name?
J.H. Wood, Brigadier J.H. Wood, John Henry Wood. He was like a lot of these, I always called them failed regular officers. They had no capability except to act as sort of junior clerks, senior clerks among a lot of junior clerks as we were. And he thought he was being a disciplinarian and so on.
So you stayed there, and when did you come back home?
I came back to Italy, and I came back in 1945. Oh, wait a minute. I got 96 days leave, and I finished, so that finished me in March 1946. So if you work 96 back from there, it must have been about November, December when I got home and saw Vi for the first time for 3 years. And that was the finish of my actual service. Except, of course, later on when I reformed the Territorial Army, I joined the Parachute Regiment. I think in many ways, when I'm being honest with myself, that was a reflex action because I felt so bloody annoyed about not being allowed to finish the war with the infantry regiment. I thought, if there's any trouble on again, I'll be with the paratroops. They can't make me a staff officer then.
What attracted you to the parachutes? This is the Dunright Infantry,
of course. It was the Dunright Infantry. You remember, I fought against the German paratroops. And I thought, well, if they can do it, I can do it, you know. And also, when the Territorial Army was reformed, the surviving 9th Battalion officers went back to the battalion. They were going to reform their mess, you see. And it was suddenly announced that they were going to be a paratroop. And they had a meeting, officers had a separate meeting. What to call them? That old officer from the 9th Battalion.
General Humphreys.
No, not Humphreys. The lad with the Western Front. From the 9th Battalion.
John Scott.
John Scott. Told me, he said, well, we had a meeting. He said, we'd all been all through the bloody war, and we said we weren't going to risk our neck parachuting, so we all refused to renew our... And there was only one officer stayed. He was a man who I'd seen on the truck going through Berg, who was wounded on the truck when I was talking to Colonel Simpson. He rang me up, he said, incidentally, I'd already applied to be for the 9th Battalion, but they said there was no room. And he rang me up, he said, would you... And also, I was getting a bit old, he said. Suddenly on the telephone came this colonel, he was a colonel then, and said, would you like to come back in the battalion? I said, well, I've been told I'm too old and I know vacancies. He said, yes, they are, we're turning to a parachute regiment. Would you still like to come? I said, yes. He said, come down to Bird Terrace Drill Hall tomorrow night. So I became a parachute. I went on a course, I went on the second course down to Upper Hayford, where we leapt out of balloons and out of Dakotas. Those were the days of one shoot, you know, and that sort of thing. Very enjoyable, really enjoyed it. And the last parachute I did, I was jumping at the airport. It used to be at Sunderland on a Battle of Britain Sunday. We were doing some parachute jumping for the benefit of the crowd. It's always a funny existence. You stand up there. I was the officer who did the first jump. And you hear the gasp from the crowd as they see you come out. It's a strange sort of feeling, you know.
What age were you now?
Well, I was when the parachute... I was 34 when the parachute... when the Territorial Army reformed.
What date was this?
1947.
And you joined the parachute battalion, the Dunright Infantry, in 1947?
That's right.
When did you finish?
In 1949, I got a job down in Yorkshire, manager of a big warehouse, and I had to move away from the district. And I went to the CEO and he said, well, I'd give up, Jack. He said, I'd love to have you with me as long as you like, but he said, if you've got to go away, you can't travel up here. And he said, I don't think you should join another parachute battalion. He said, very good. Our CEO then, incidentally, was a regular officer.
That was his name?
He was Colonel Birkbeck. When he died, he was Major General Birkbeck. And very nice bloke, tall fellow. And he wasn't allowed to jump except operationally because he was so heavy and so tall. He had been with the paratroops before, you know. And the last time I saw him, he was finished. And he was still a colonel, but he was an instructor down at Aldershot, at the officer's place, you know.
Where were you drawing men from?
Gateshead.
There would have been, in effect, all 9th Battalion.
All 9th, but there were just one or two old 9th Battalion men, because the rest had a belly full of the war and so on. But we had a lot of keen sort of lads, you know, very good. And a lot of them were young men, just 1920.
Had any of the after-war scares caused any stir that you might be in action again or might be sent to do things?
No, not as far as I know. The only thing is that I've got a letter in the house. It seems rather silly to say so, but you remember when it went to the Falklands? And I thought, well, if there's any way I can help. So I wrote a letter to the War Office and said, I appreciate I was getting very old, but I felt sure I could still do one parachute jump. And when I was on the ground, I was sure to be some use. So if they could use me at all, I'd be very happy to do so. And I wrote back and said, well, thank you very, very much indeed for your offer, but you are really well above the military age and we wouldn't consider having to use you. So, Williams, your military life's finished.